From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
What the phrase ground cover means has really changed in the years Ken Drews and I have been gardening. And I'll admit right here, some of the choices that I made to do the job of covering the ground under shrubs and trees at my place are now plants I want to be rid of. Last time Ken Drews, author of The New Shade Garden, was here with us, we promised to talk when he visited again about my ground cover eradication program targeted at one rampant perennial and what might go there instead. And that's our topic today, ground covers, out with the old, in with the new. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full-gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
Ken Drews is back, as promised last time, to talk about ground covers, and he's laughing already. I haven't even finished speaking. Hello there.
Well, when you tell me what I promised, it's like, oh, okay, I'm with
Hi,
you.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Ken. So we should say before we get started, we're going to have a giveaway of the new Shade Garden book, which is one of your most popular topics and includes a lot of course, ground covers, because shade is often made by woody plants that need someone at their feet, right?
Well, I don't want to, I can plug the book, but it has an entire chapter on ground covers and it has a whole page on sedges. I thought, what's the name of that sedge? And I looked in the book and there it is. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So last time we were speaking on the show, first, I guess I should suppose I should ask you, did you have any frost in September?
Well, it was funny because, you know, it was like shorts one day, long pants the next day, coat the next day, shorts the next day.
Yeah.
So there were three nights of light, very light frost, and the plants looked okay, but the car was covered with what looked like ice. So, you know, it continues to be strange, doesn't it?
Very strange and so, so dry. I know you're not as dry as I am, and we're only a couple of hours apart. But you are, yeah. But you've technically had more precipitation than I have a couple of hours, few hours away, but still Northeast is dry, so...
I put all the hoses away. I took all the hoses out.
I see the revolving door theory of gardening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So last time we spoke, I confessed to being on a war against one ground cover, you know, that I used to love for its variegated sort of silvery and green leaves, kind of almost looks like an ivy-ish vining but low prostrate thing. Lamiastrum galeobdalin, yellow archangel, which, you know, 30 or more years ago when I planted it, it was like a coveted thing. And now it's on the invasive list in the Northwest, and it's invading into woodlands as the climate warms in, you know, the Northeast, and you're starting to see it on the invasive list in new areas and so forth. And I have suddenly 40 miles of it in my garden because it no longer stays, you know, within a reasonable range. So, I mean, maybe we should first say, what's a ground cover and what do we want to use them for anyway, right?
Good idea. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay. I think a ground cover is a plant that increases in numbers over time, but does not run away or spread too fast. It's usually weed suppressing. That's what we hope. And we have a couple of those. And you think of a ground cover as something you can walk on, but there's not a whole lot of plants that will tolerate being walked on besides grass lawn. But a ground cover is anything that could do what I suggested first, you know, spread a bit and suppress weeds. And it could be 7 feet tall. It can be a big shrub. And I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, what do you think? Is that just about it?
Yeah. And like what you said, you know, we think when we hear, if you hear the phrase ground cover, you would think, oh, like turf, you know, I can walk on it. But they're really ain't no such things. I mean, there's so few things that can tolerate that. I mean, maybe creeping thyme in a lawn you could technically walk on, but, you know, really almost none of them. So and it can be any height. I completely agree. It's maybe a living mulch is the you know, Claudia West of landscape designer of Phyto Studios. She says plants are the mulch. You know, that's one of her key phrases that we need to remember. And I think in a way, like I have a lot of masses of ground cover, like geranium macrorhizum, the big root geranium.
Oh, the best.
Yeah, and doesn't seed around, it is rhizomatous, but the rhizomes don't spread sideways underground. It's kind of like it sounds, big root on the surface. So I find that easy. You know, you can just edit it. You can pull out a bunch and throw it away and so forth. But it gives you that weed suppression that you were talking about, right? It's a living mulch. It shades the ground under the trees and shrubs, helps keeps moisture in, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not so rambunctious that it's a troublemaker. It won't jump out of where it was, where you intended it to be. Does that make sense?
Yes. There was one plant here 26 years ago that I guess the people before I bought this place planted. And I'm still eradicating it. And this year it was a ground cover this year. I think it almost ate the house. And it's a Hotunia.
Oh yeah, or Hotunia, however, the chameleon plant. That's a nightmare. That's actually one of the most popular stories on my website ever, is one of the most visited from Google searches, is about how can I kill this plant?
And it's still sold. It's still sold almost.
Nightmare
everywhere.
Plant. Yeah, we've mentioned it before. It is a nightmare plant. But the geranium macrorhizum, by comparison, it only exists in the places I've put it in, though I started with a few plants and I now have large expanses of it. It means that I don't have to weed those beds as often. It's nearly evergreen even here in zone 5B. And, you know, it just does a really good weed suppressing kind of a job. But then there's like the Lamiaestrum, which wants to take over the earth. And, you know, so forth. So,
and you participated in its takeover.
And I did. And so, you know, there's lots of things. And we should say, of course, the disclaimer as ever, what is invasive in one place or becoming invasive is, again, the temperature shift, the weather, the climate shifts, is not the same as in another place. You know, something may self-sow in Georgia that doesn't self-sow in Michigan, and
in the neighborhood.
depending on soil types and
exactly. There's so many things that you can grow, like your Angelica gigas. I cannot grow that at
all.
And for you, that comes up
from
seed, self-sown seed.
So, I mean, the classic things that, you know, and I have to say, 150 years ago, I wrote a book about ground covers for some series. Gardening series, I remember, a small book about ground covers, and probably most of the plants that are in it, I would never grow today. And, you know, in those days, and long before, as you can see remnants of all over the country, you know, Vinca, Pachysandra, English ivy, they were the ground covers. And now miles of those we're seeing, you know, climb up trees like the ivy does and smother trees and, you know, be a disaster. But I think there's a whole other generation of our plants from 20 and 30 and even 10 years ago that are going to do that too. Do you know what I mean? So how do we pick a good one? And what do we do about the ones we have? And I've just felt, and I've been doing this, I started last year in fall. And I think the spring and fall, when the soil is generally moister, right? And also when a big job of digging isn't such, you know, it's not like 95 degrees out. It's a good time to do it when the soil is generally moister. It's easier to work out the roots. But the process takes, like, you can't just dig up a bunch of stuff and then replant the area. So you have to have the long view. And it's hard for me creating these big blank spaces and just kind of looking at them like, do you know what I mean? Like it's been pillaged. Do you know the spot's just been you know, it looked nice with the stuff. It looked knit together, right?
So what are you going to do?
So I started last fall in one area, did one area. This spring, I did the second pass on that area, pieces that resprouted, right? Mm-hmm. And depending on when I stop seeing a robust reoccurrence, I'm going to replant the areas. But I acknowledge that it may be a year. In other words, like a fall, a spring, and a fall cleanup before I replant the second fall or something.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And I guess you could do it sooner and then weed from among, you know, where the lamiaceum or whatever it is comes up. I guess you could do that. But it's such hard work going in among everything and untangling the roots of your desired new plants and the old. Do you know what I mean? So I just decided that since we have the pandemic and we don't have garden open days and all these things, I was just going to give myself the time to do it right. Mm-hmm. If these were sunnier areas, which of course they're not because they're in the shade, because they're under plantings. I would probably have done the first pass and then put down plastic.
Right. Solarized it.
Exactly. As they say. But I didn't think that would really do much in the situations that they're in.
Well, you have an opportunity to do some experimentation, you know, try some white vinegar maybe or some other quote unquote organic solutions. Maybe get one of those blow torches.
Flame weeders.
Yeah, that's not going to help, I don't think.
I wonder, they call it a blowtorch.
If you planted some of your mycorrhizum, I wonder if the lamium would come up through it. I suspect it would, but it stops just about everything.
Hmm, yeah. And what I'm planning to do, and I don't know if, you know, I think you're doing this too, is where I have an opportunity where something dies or where I've decided to get rid of something, I'm going with native choices for the replacement. And so the Geranium mycorrhizum is not a native, and I've got lots of it. And so that's the other part of the puzzle, is doing the homework to find a good ground cover for the future that doesn't have these characteristics of vinca, pachysandra, ivy, or in the case lamiaceum, or there's lots of others. You said the houtunia, you know, there's many others that have this tendency to be overly enthusiastic and move sideways too fast and too ambitiously, and become a monoculture. That's what they are, right? Is that the ground covers we don't like are the ones that don't allow anyone else to cohabitate with them.
Well, except we want to cover an area. We
right. But we don't want it to completely eradicate.
Well, to go where it's not wanted.
Yeah.
And some things you might be able to mow the edge and stop it that way, but you really want something that fills in, but maybe we have to think of it as something that clumps versus something that runs, right. Something that just increases in volume by getting larger, by the plant getting larger. I mean, I love ostrich fern, and I planted them, and after a few years, they looked so incredible. But then I saw the rhizomes were across the path and coming up in the bed across the path. So that's a native plant here. Even.
Right. And that's a great plant, and and I have it here, and I love it, but it should never, it can never be combined into a mixed planting with the hope that it will behave. It's right. So, for instance, at the edge of the woods here, I could put that and let it go into the woods where there's nothing because of over the years the deer and so forth have browsed, and let it have its way because, again, it's a native fern. It's appropriate, but also its rambunctious habit is desirable in a place that's been decimated and deer don't really like ferns. So hello, right. That would be a good one, but it's not a good companion for other perennials in a bed.
No, I guess it would be a good one to plant next to the asphalt driveway. Something that could stop it.
Do you have other ground covers besides the Geranium mycorrhizum, or do you have mostly sort of mixed?
Oh my gosh. you know, when you said, let's talk about ground covers, I started making a list of just the things that are here. And it's about, I don't know, 25 plants that I'm using. And I'm surprised. When you asked me, I thought, I don't have any ground covers. And then I walked around, took some pictures. I have a lot of ground covers. And I thought also about things that I planted that I regret, because that you got me thinking about that too. And a plant that I was told wouldn't spread, Pinellia. I got two different Pinellia species. They're almost like jack-in-the-pulpits. Right. And I was told, oh, no, there's no problem with them. And they even hybridized, and then they got in the compost. And that's my future,
right?
Is digging out Pinellia.
So for those who are listening, really what we're both acknowledging, and we theoretically have a lot of knowledge or some expertise or whatever, and so we're informed, you know, and we get information from other experts and blah, blah, blah. And yet we make mistakes. And I think that's what we're trying to say out loud. And also mm-hmm. things have changed as the climate changes. Things have changed even in the same location. And things that are listed in catalogs that say, this is good for this. Well, that may be for Georgia or for, you know, Chicago, but not the opposite. And, you know, you learn, you live and learn. And I think it's a great time, the fall and then again in the early spring. We got to acknowledge some of the things that aren't working, not just aesthetically, but ecologically, you know, that aren't working and that need to be dealt with. And it's going to make a mess. It's going to make a big empty hole. But I want to say, let's go ahead and do it, right? Let's go ahead and finally face some of these things, not just let them march another mile.
Definitely. And you are doing that. And I'm wondering, how can we know what will be a good ground cover that will behave? And I suppose we can look at a local public garden and see what's happening there. We can read up whatever we can. We can look to friends. We can think about how plants behave in their native habitats if they're not indigenous plants. You know, check something out. See if it's something that eats a woodland or covers a hillside in China, and think, well, maybe that's not the plant for me.
Right, you know? Right.
And think about how the plant spreads. You know, we mentioned running. So if a plant has stolons or runners, or like the lamiastrum, which is like strings,
yes.
Almost like a strawberry. It just, you know,
yes.
It runs. So we realize that may not be the best choice. Let's look to something like native ginger or something that just casually spreads. And if you buy enough plants and if you divide them, it will fill in. It'll fill in like that lamiastrum. And it won't even take that long.
Right.
Maybe third year, it'll look pretty good.
Right. And there's so many, like you said, the native ginger. And that can be a robust grower, but it's pretty easy to take out where you don't want it and, you know, just dig it out. And it is appropriate. And again, we're both in the Northeast, so the adjustment has to be made to another species, maybe of native asarum, native ginger, or depending on where you live, or another plant. You mentioned carex is the sedges before, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of them that are appropriate to different situations that are different sizes and textures, many of them native. The ferns we were talking about, the ostrich fern, but there's many, many, many ferns, and in each region there's appropriate ones for different conditions. You know, these are some of the great plants that you know, we need to, I think, investigate. You know, so yeah.
There's the native ginger, geranium too, maculatum.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you grow that?
I do. And it was here when I got here. So it is a native plant in my area, and it sows in here and there in shady areas. It doesn't make a thick ground cover. It's more of it's a perennial, but it doesn't make a mass like the geranium macrorhizum does. Mm. Yeah. So many other, I mean, epimediums. Epimediums,
oh, well.
For instance.
I can tell you some of the plants around in my garden. I've got, you know, even a juga can be okay, and that you can mow that too. You could probably walk on the smaller jugas, but I like that Caitlin's Giant, and that's so easy to get rid of. It's, you know, you just pull it up.
Right.
But we've talked about Brunnera here in dry shade before, which you didn't have as much luck with as I do. I have it in the driest shade of all, and it's just, it's a completely weed-suppressing ground cover for me. Mm-hmm. And the carex, as you talked about. And, you know, I'm going to say something. Fargesia. Do you know what Fargesia is?
It's a clumping bamboo, yes.
You are right. It's the only winter hardy, cold hardy to zone 5, non-running bamboo. And the one I grow is about 3 feet tall, and it's very beautiful. And as you said, it's a clump. And I've planted it where I have erosion issues. So it's a ground cover, 3 feet tall, and it's fighting erosion.
Right.
And Heuchera villosa, that's a native plant.
I love that plant. And that will self-sow around, so you'll get more plants, and not in a nasty way, very easy to just pick up and move. So that's one that will give you, you can start with a couple of plants, and you'll soon have plenty, I think. You know, you can move them around and make a nice big planting. I think Tiarella, the foam flowers, mm-hmm. speaking of other native things, another one that I, in an area where that I plan to use in one of the areas that I've begun this eradication thing, that and some Christmas fern and some other ferns, I got a certain number of each one. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to put them in one spot and let the little young plants grow a little bit so that when I'm ready to move them into the eventual cleaned up spots, you know, that right. will be good.
Your splinter nursery.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah, it kind of is. But I am definitely looking more and more for inspiration at the native, because these are big areas, you know, these are big areas. And I don't want to introduce another alien plant into the big areas that could potentially in 10 more years or whatever be a problem. And one of the things to do about is it a problem or not that you were talking about before, it's pretty eye-opening if you put in the name of like Lamiastrum invasive. If you just do a two-word Google search, or in the case of woody plants, like, you know, double file viburnum invasive, if you put in a you get so much information from all of the invasive plant societies and the science research projects around the country, and you get maps that show you where the plant's proving to be a problem, if it is or if not. Missouri Botanical Garden, their plant finder database always tells about whether a plant's invasive or not and where. You know, you can do the homework before you buy 50 of something or even 5 of something. So we just have a couple more minutes, and I want to hear a couple more plants that you do find. I mean, again, the epimediums are not native, but I do find that some of them are spreaders in a good way, not super invasive, and more others are more tight. They don't move as fast.
I grow some Xanthorrhiza, yellow root, which is like a sub-shrub. Polygonatum, there are native polygonatums, and there are ones that are not native, but in time, they will fill in. And usually they're between 2 feet and 4 feet, depending on which kind you get. I'd love to say the native Pachysandra can be a good ground cover, but it's a little wimpy. Mm-hmm. It's not like the Asian Pachysandra, but I have a variegated version of the Asian Pachysandra, and it's so slow and it's beautiful that I don't think it's quite the same as the army green plastic one you can drive over. Not quite.
It's not. Ryopies, it's not at all.
I grow some liriopes and macrobiota. Do you remember that shrub that was
Microbiota, yes.
A while back, it's sort of a low-growing, I guess it's called Siberian cypress.
Yes.
It's slow, but that's kind of a nice one. Nepeta and lavender. If you have sun, you can grow, you know, just picture Provence. You can grow lavender as a ground cover. Not here either. Cold for you.
A lot of people had junipers as ground covers, and one of the ones that, as a final thought, one of the ones there's a cultivar of the eastern red cedar, Juniperus virginiana, called Gray Ghost. Ooh, have you ever seen it?
No.
It's not super low, but boy, it's a beautiful blue silver color, Gray Ghost. So that's one to look for if you want a medium height ground cover, and it derives from a native Eastern conifer. Anyway, we're out of time, of course. There's a million more to talk about. Yep. But like, let's look for some opportunities to do some cleanup. Let's go ahead and sort of bite the bullet, right? And maybe replace with something better.
And no Roundup.
And no Roundup in the process, right? Some digging, folks. Lots of digging. You heard it here first. All right, Ken, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Margaret.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. or on Facebook and Instagram as @AwayToGarden. And happy gardening and removing of unwanted ground covers meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.